Hello there, folks, and welcome back to Dave Pelton's Phenomenal Artist Interviewee Series. I am your host, and we are here with someone that the world has been wanting to interview for quite some time, and I'm just counted and touted a privilege to be here with him. He has been called everything and anything from a container to an alembic, a bag, a beaker, a bin, a bottle, a bow, you know, any of these things, any of these words, these incredible slanders to him. I would like to just play a little bumper real quick right now so that you guys can be introduced to the legacy and the incredible facade that is R2-D2.
A story of passion.
You're a feisty little one.
Of tenderness.
But I've never seen such devotion in a droid before.
Of courage.
That little droid did it!
This fall, Lucasfilm Limited takes you beyond the mystery.
When I saw him, I said, oh, this guy's perfect. You know, I hope he speaks English.
Behind the facade.
He and I have been at odds, and there's actually a lawsuit pending, so a lot of this I can't talk about.
R2-D2, Beneath the Dome.
So thank you, R2, for allowing me the privilege to be able to settle things once and for all. I mean, I know you seriously grace your time, and you value it beyond anything and everything. So we'll just get a couple of preliminary questions out there. What have you been doing recently as far as work? I know that you've been turned down for several roles, but it is definitely something I'm and our viewers would be interested in knowing. What is it that you're currently working on? Okay, that's, wow. There is, for those of you that are listening to this via podcast, there is somewhat of a language barrier here when speaking with R2-D2. I will do it the best I can to present if it doesn't warrant anything like that. But I think basically R2-D2 will have a serious chance to explain so many, and we'll get to some serious questions in just a moment. But basically, what I had heard, one of my closest friends, they don't understand your character and your persona in the film. Could you explain the difference between you and, let's say, someone as the C-3PO? All right. Okay. Definitely. All right. Very, very good. Very animated. I've always appreciated that about your work, is that you have lots and lots of things going on. You're very animated, involved, speaking character. So I think that's pretty cool. I know several people had some things to say about you, and I retrieved some of those interviews. We'll listen to those now and see what you think about those.
Emerging from a past shrouded in mystery, R2-D2 burst into the American consciousness with his star-making role in Star Wars, A New Hope.
He was actually at the University of Arizona trying to study theater. They had taken a couple classes, but mostly he was working as an ash can.
He was doing an amazing production in A Christmas Carol. He was Tiny Tim.
And I think he had played in some of the early clubs during the early 60s in England.
He trained with the June Taylor Dancers years ago, and he was just, you know, he's a hoofer.
I'm not real sure that accent is like the real deal, you know. I mean, homeboy is probably like from Detroit or somewhere.
I'd heard that he was doing some experimental dance. You know, that was sort of in the 60s. I don't think anybody remembers anything about what happened in those years.
When we were starting, he was a sweet young droid and very anxious to please. He'd go and get you coffee or something. We actually tried to get him, R2-D2, in The Godfather.
If I remember correctly, he wanted him for the Michael Corleone role.
Since I've read the book, I mean, I could just see him in those scenes when he's walking through the Sicilian countryside with the two bodyguards with their shotguns. And so kind of that image always made me persist in trying to get him the part, but they didn't see it. Bob Evans called him a runt.
Though The Godfather slipped through his grasp, Star Wars made R2 an international star. Still, he yearned for more.
I think he really wanted to be in the Indiana Jones series.
So as soon as he heard that Steven and I were doing something, he immediately said, can I have the lead in this?
One day in the prop department, we found him and he had the hat and the whip.
Well, as an actor, you have to understand that R2 is limited.
He used to say he would like to have been a Shakespearean actor.
He could carry a spear.
He heard, I think it's Kenneth Branagh was doing Richard III, and he auditioned for The Hump. And he was very sad not to get it.
His glory days behind him, R2 faced an uncertain future.
After the completion of Return of the Jedi, all of us went off to other things in our career, and R2 was left in his beach house in Malibu with nothing to do, you know, to watch the tide come in and out. It was a dark time for him.
A lot of things went on during those lost years.
He just kind of did a few independent films, and then he was doing some commercials.
I heard that he had, on the side, without telling anybody, had done some dinner theater and some other kinds of things.
I mean, R2, at a certain point, he started drinking a lot.
I went to see him. He was living in a cabin, just alone. Didn't take care of himself. He was rusty. He had let his hair grow.
He is somebody that I felt could have benefited very much from Prozac.
Wow, that's just fantastic. That is wonderful. One of the negative things that I have heard is that if they could kill one of the group, is that it would be definitely R2-D2. And the reasons that they thought that would be the case is that because he doesn't speak any English and he just sits there and he beeps, I have no idea how anyone understands him, is what they say. They say that C-3PO is close to a human form and that he can talk and has actual some part of intelligent function. R2 has no arms or hands, and he's not that useful. And the only thing he seems to be good for is projecting holograms. I'm pretty sure that they could probably make C-3PO do those things. And I don't know. When I hear those things that they really don't like R2-D2, I don't understand. How do you deal with such involved and excessive negativity? Wow. That's fantastic. Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you for that. It's honest sometimes, and it's hard to be that honest, so I appreciate that you're allowing some sensitivity to show. Quite possibly the most difficult thing that I have heard come from what these it's a group of people, and they call themselves Warsies. They are all about Star Wars. They know everything. They know all the jingles. They know the Ewok tunes, the new one, the old one. They can recite ad nauseum the lyrics and the tunes and things like that. I thought it was rough that they're so tough on you, harder on R2, than they are on even Jar Jar Binks, even though they went so far as to, there's a version of Star Wars on the internet that has no Jar Jar Binks, that they have removed him from that, but they haven't gone so far to do that with you. But I'm going to read something that is quite disturbing. In The Return of the Jedi, most Warsies have a hard time with your character and believing it, because R2 butts C-3PO over the edge and steps off, tumbling towards the sand. But clearly in another episode, you are seen flying. And the question that they want to know, and maybe you can finally bring clarity to this, is why did R2 not fly in Return of the Jedi when he clearly flies in Attack of the Clones? He uses his rocket jets and flies up into the factory. Is there something, is there some point of clarity that you could bring to that? Wow, that's fantastic. I never knew that. That's incredible. There's nothing... Wow, I am so amazed. Thank you so much, R2, for bringing the finality to that. I would have never imagined. It's quite a difference when I hear that now. Well, thank you guys out there for joining us on this special edition of the Fraudcast, the Artist Interview Phenomenal Series. And we will leave a little bit of more of the some audio clips about R2. And R2, thank you for your time. Thank you.